Let's Get Started. That is our theme music, which means it is time for Aging Well Together show. Sorry, I just broke the sound machine. Sorry, WCOM. One of the dots came off, made a little like... For Santa needs to bring WCOM a new little sound. I don't even know what to call it. Anyway, welcome. So excited to get this show started. I know I say that all the time, but today's show I know is going to be so fabulous as it's all about writing towards resilience, how we can unlock our creative writing powers for all kinds of healing benefits. And as someone who loves to talk, I'm excited to get more guidance on how to put my own ideas on paper rather than just spewing them out of my mouth. So I'm excited for all of the information we are going to learn together. But before we dive into our show, I always want to give a shout out to WCOMLP Chapel Hill Carrboro on 103.5 for everything they do, but especially since I don't think I'm the one that broke that piece. I think that was already a little loose. Anyway, thank you, WCOM, for hosting our weekly Aging Well Together show. Our show is also available to stream anytime on WCOMFM.org and through streaming services. So many thanks for listening to us, however we are coming to you. The Aging Well Together show is brought to you by the wonderfully helpful team. I always send love to them. They are from the Orange County Department on Aging. And please join us each week as we interview special guests to share information, resources, insights, and stories about the opportunities for aging well together. If you want more information, I know I say this all the time, but we love to get suggestions of topics to have for shows, or if you're someone who wants to come and share your story, feel free to email me at agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com, or please connect with the Orange County Department on Aging. If you have a piece of paper and a pencil ready, I can tell you, you can always reach the Department on Aging by calling, well, not always, but during your typical business hours, 919-968-2070, or through their website at orangecountync.gov/aging. I'm also excited, as I've shared before, that all of our recorded shows are available on the Orange County Department on Aging's website. So when you go to the website, there's a link to the Aging Well Together radio show, and you can listen to the past 25 shows. This is our 26th show. And a shout out to the Carrboro bass band, the Robert Bradford Quartet, for allowing us to use their great music for our opening and closing theme music. You heard just a moment of it. Carol and I already started dancing a little bit, but you'll be able to dance a bit more, sway a bit more at the end of the show. And before starting our discussion, as always, I take a moment to introduce myself. I am your host, Heather Altman. I've spent over 25 years working in aging services, and I continue to work with older adults and their families, connect with supportive resources in our community. I'm a caregiver for older family members, and Carol and I were just talking about how we are proud of our ages. I am proud of my 53 years, and I, of course, am focusing on my own changing needs, not just those around me, and so I am super invested in how we are all aging well together. Okay. Super excited. Get to turn it over to our great guest this week. She has a wonderful history and bio, so I want to share a little bit about it before I put her on the mic. We have Carol Henderson. She is a writer, teacher, and workshop leader who has taught writing in the United States, Europe, and the Middle East. She has published two memoirs, written widely for magazines and newspapers for the past 25 years, and edited several memoirs and essay collections. Her first memoir, Losing Malcolm, A Mother's Journey Through Grief, which was brought out, which was published by the University Press of Mississippi in 2001, was chosen as a must-read memoir by USA Today. She has also coached writers one-on-one and has helped many authors find publishers for their memoirs. I have a really hard time with that word, memoirs. That kind of comes off the word. Anyway, since 2002, Carol has led ongoing workshops and retreats for those living with grief and loss. See her book, Farther Along, The Writing Journey of 13 Bereaved Mothers, that came out by Willowdale Books in 2012. She has trained support services staff all over the country and has written a supporting guidebook to integrate restorative writing. And I absolutely love that term. We're going to talk all about that. Restorative writing into the hospice environment. She also leads ongoing creative nonfiction workshops, as well as writing workshops for those living with chronic illness. She teaches in medical centers, faith and civic communities, colleges, and retreat centers all over the country. Carol, sometimes forget to share websites, so let me go ahead now. You can find more information about Carol at very easy, carolhenderson.com. And I will add one thing. Carol and I have known each other. I can't even do the math. I think it's been over 10 years when we first met. She's nodding to me. When we first met, all about when I learned about your writing, writing around grief and resilience. And so she's been a personal inspiration. Every time I talk to her, I feel like I need to do some writing. So anyway, welcome, Carol.
Thank you so much, Heather. I'm delighted to be here.
Great.
And if I could just start by giving a shout out to your program. In preparation for this, I listened to some earlier programs, and I am so impressed with what you do here. I have notes on, I was so interested in the people who were talking about the services available. Oh, the two social workers mm-hmm. who work through
Kim
the geriatric.
That was the last show. Jennifer,
yes. Jennifer
and Brian Godfrey from the UNC Geriatrics.
Fabulous. And
yes.
I am going to be in touch with them about a few things. And then I just listened to a couple of the other shows, and they are just really, really good, high quality, and full of information for people. A lot of stuff I wish I had found earlier, like when I was wondering what to do about Medicare and, you know, just various things.
Yeah, you really did go through our treasure trove of archive shows.
I did. I really enjoyed the man who talked about storytelling and putting all of your, compiling your information and getting it into a form that can be used by that you can condense something that's 30 minutes down into 4 minutes, and I don't know, all of this is so relevant for so many of us who are trying to figure out how do we, besides writing down, which you see I've written down, if you could see what I brought with me, it's ridiculous.
There's a lot of show and tell,
which unfortunately we can't show. But anyway, so just a shout out to you, Heather.
Well, thank you,
because I think this is a really, really fine show, and I plan on taking full advantage of it. So
wow. Well, let me say thank you for that. There was a part of me that's like, oh, we should record that, and then I realized, oh wait, we are recording that.
Yes. Testimonial that you want to use, please feel free. I will do more.
I did want to say,
I hear that all the time, Heather.
All right, I'm going to turn your microphone on. My good friend and wonderful co-host Alicia Reed has just joined us in the super cold, but you'll see there's a little warmth coming towards you.
But Heather, I hear that all the time.
Yes.
About what you just said.
Oh, well, put the mic closer to you if you're going to be sharing some love. So I'm so glad that we're making a difference here on Aging Well Together. As always, which gives me so much joy when Alicia Reed joins us. Alicia is, as we call her, wellness instructor extraordinaire for Orange County. And so thank you for joining us, Alicia. And, of course, stay tuned at 3 o'clock to listen to Afternoon Talk with Alicia. All right, Carol, before you get into other people's stories and how you help other people do their stories, and you do have a lot of papers in front of you, we always do this here, and since you are a returning listener to the show, she's showing us flip charts.
Oh, my goodness.
No.
Can
this
you
is,
see this?
This is simply called a mind map, and it's
yes.
something that I'm going to recommend to people. That's why I just brought an example of one that I started last night. So, anyway.
Oh, you did that last night. All right. Well, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Carol.
Yeah.
We want to know about you. And what brought you into the, no rush, we're here for a while. Tell us about you and your journey into writing, and then, you know, it will go into your journey into helping others write in a much more, I love the word, restorative way. So,
Okay, well, I said to Heather, I could talk probably, I never talk about myself, so given a chance, I'm always working with other people in their stories. So given this chance, I could really go on and on. She's just going to kick me under the table.
No,
I've gone too far, which is fine.
44 minutes.
But I want to just say that I have always kept a journal since I was a young girl, or intermittently. But for the most part, I have kept a journal because a journal for me is a place where I process. Let me show you. Here's what I wrote. I'm going to read it. This is something that I go, why keep a journal? In your journal, you can express feelings without inhibition, recognize and alter self-defeating habits of mind, and come to know and accept that self, which is you. It is a sanctuary where all the disparate elements of a life, feelings, thoughts, dreams, hopes, fears, fantasies, practicalities, worries, facts, and intuitions can merge to give you a sense of wholeness and coherence.
Mm-hmm. Well, so you talked about a journal, and I want to know more about you, but I do want you to talk about those of us who are journal phobic. I've tried multiple times in my life, and I don't have it's not the drive or the dedication. Well, it must not be the dedication or the drive, because I'll do it for a day or two, and then I don't make it a priority. But tell us more about you.
Okay.
And then
I can get into some of that. As I said in the beginning, I kind of wish that this were even just a workshop, because I would get you all writing right now. But
we'll just let the air go silent, and we'll just sit and scribble here. It'll be like,
listen,
everyone, take out your pens.
There is nothing like that sacred quiet when everyone is scribbling about their lives in any kind of writing workshop. It is just magnificent. But anyway, me and my ragtag crazy life and how I got to where I am, I will try to be succinct. I started out, I went to college, and it was in the 70s, and it was when people could put together all these really weird majors. So mine was like dance, art history, English, one of these inter arts majors, they called it, at Oberlin College. And it was all kind of loosey goosey, but it was also quite good. At the end of that year, I traveled in a yellow school bus with a group called the Oberlin Dance Collective. Mm-hmm. We traveled around the country performing wherever we could. Wherever we knew anyone, literally, we lived in this bus with the director of the group and her three children and the beagle that ran away, thank God. But anyway, so...
I love the dance troupe part. That, I'm into it. And
okay.
I love that, and then you got to beagle. Go on. This is fascinating.
Yeah, so I was the person who was charged with contacting the cities ahead of time and saying, where can we perform, and writing press releases and getting shut out. Anyway, so I did that all summer. And I'm an insomniac, so I always drove the 1 a.m. through 7 a.m. spiel, through all the mountains around the world or anything, whatever. So I did that for summer, not having much idea of what I wanted to do, except that I was a dancer, although not really a very good one. I came back to Boston and started working there as a dancer and met my husband there. And from that, was a dancer for several years and then left dance. We moved to Los Angeles. I got into being a massage therapist because that was sort of related.
Oh, wow. That's
a big jump.
This is so many fascinating things. We're just doing the show on Carol, not even writing. Go on.
Writing all the time, I will say. I always was sort of tracking what was going on and trying to figure out what in the world I was doing with myself. And this was not always pleasant, mind you. And so then we ended up moving from L.A. back to New York and realized we couldn't keep our apartment because of various things. And I was pregnant. So we left the city and moved to Rhode Island. We had a baby who, unfortunately, was born with a very serious defect and died after 6 weeks and two open heart surgeries. And I did just, the only way I survived that was by journaling. I mean, I wrote down everything that every doctor said, every nurse said, every parent in the next ICU area said. I mean, it's so, anyway, sort of put that aside for a while. And then I started doing corporate communications, writing, working, doing that kind of work with my husband. And then I became a columnist for the Chapel Hill News, which I did for about 20 years, I was a monthly columnist. And I had a whole bunch of, and then I wrote essays on child rearing. Luckily, I had two healthy girls after our son Malcolm died. And I decided one day that we had a little puppy who got up very early. And I said, I'm trying to finish some more essays so that I can put a book together of lighthearted parenting essays. And so I got up with this little loud puppy who was, because I didn't want her to wake the whole house up. And I would sit in the kitchen with her and I would write. And I said, oh, good, these lighthearted essays, they'll come out. Well, what came out? What came pouring out was the story of Malcolm and Malcolm's life and Malcolm's death. And this was maybe, you know, 15 years after he had died. So that ended up being a book that was published in 2001. And I went around and gave a lot of readings from that book. And people would come up to me, line up to come up and talk to me afterwards. And just these devastated people, young people, older people. Just, you know, what do? I have lost this loved one. My child died. My wife died. And, I mean, I'm not a trained psychologist. I didn't know what I didn't know what to say. So I would just finally, I realized all I could tell them was what I knew to do, which was to write. Mm-hmm. So that basically launched my writing for personal edification, you know, Sure. Whatever, transformation, however you want to say it, just personal expression, restoration. And actually, I taught here in the Art Center for a couple of years, back in the early 2000s. And then I really was interested in grief and loss and writing about that. And so I ran some workshops that ended up continuing for many, many years. One of them is still writing, a group of bereaved mothers, and I published a book with them about it was called Farther Along, 13 Bereaved Mothers Writing, and it was sort of our journey together as a group of random women who came together for a one-day workshop, and then we ended up, we're still together. We're going to Quebec City in 2024 for another retreat. We meet at least twice a year. They're women from all over the place, and they've lost children to cancer, accidents, suicide, whatever. Mm-hmm. So that, all of that, so that really was one big aspect of the writing that I did. Another was I really enjoyed essay writing and working with people on creative nonfiction, which is essay, memoir. Mm-hmm. I know you said you had trouble.
I cannot say the word.
I know memoir is a difficult word for Heather, but you all know what it means. It's writing one's personal experience or a piece of one's life into a book or something. So I worked with a lot of different people. I would work one-on-one. I offered a lot of workshops, creative nonfiction, all over the place. And just a little aside, one of the jobs that came my way was going to the country of Qatar, which now everyone has heard of after the World Cup. Mm-hmm. But back when I started going in 2006, I didn't even know where it was. I had to look it up on a map. I was in a workshop, teaching a workshop, and a woman said, would you come to Qatar and teach? I said, well, sure. I didn't even know where it was or what it was all about. But anyway, that was a really fascinating experience because I was working with a lot of young women and men for whom English was not a first language and their country was trying to make them start to write and think in English. This was a State Department soft diplomacy grant is what these things are called. And I would have these young women, and this is where this might be helpful to some people, who would be in these classes with me, and they would say, doctor, doctor. Every teacher was doctor, doctor, doctor. There is nothing in my mind. I would give a prompt, like, write about what's going on right now. Doctor, there is nothing. I have nothing. And I would say, write as though you're talking to your best friend.
Ooh,
okay, you talk on the phone to your friend, right? I know. I see you all on your phone. So just instead of calling your friend and talking to her, write down what you might say to her. And this got a lot of them going. And we ended up publishing, Bloomsbury Press published two collections of essays by these young men and women who basically were two generations away from being pearl divers and fishermen, and now we're members of one of the richest countries in the world. So it was a very big transformation for all of these people, and I was really interested in the history of their lives. Like, well, your grandfather, what? He was a fisherman, and you were itinerant and all this. Anyway, so that was, one area of my life that I've really particularly enjoyed. And also I realized if I could get those women sitting there, filing their nails and not wanting to have anything to do with anything, especially me, if I could get them writing, then I think anybody can write. And there's this woman, Pat Schneider, who formed an organization, Amherst Writers and Artists, has a line which is, and I always get it backwards, so I wrote it down somewhere, probably on this big thing right here. Wow. Here we go. Talking is writing on the air. Heather.
Oh, I like that.
Heather. Alicia, get your pen out.
Talking
Alicia,
is like writing on the
talking
air. If you can
writing
talk
on the air.
If you can talk, you can write. And that is
I
Pat
like that.
Schneider. So sometime instead of talking, just turn on your phone and talk into your phone, and then get some transcription service to translate that for you into something, something that you might find useful. So basically, I have found in so many different environments, people can write, especially if they aren't just hit over the head with very demanding expectations in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So I use this process from a line of Emily Dickinson's, which is called Tell It Slant, which means when I go into a group of bereaved parents, I don't have them sit down, and they've never written before, and they don't know what they're doing there, except they'll do anything to try to relieve a little bit of their pain. And I'll say, I won't say, okay, tell me about the worst day in your child's life and how you... We will start out by maybe saying, well, actually, the way those workshops start is that I have them write down just the facts of their child's life and death, and they read that, and then we move on into something, write about something maybe that belonged to your child, and they will write about that. And, so we sort of ease our way into this.
Mm-hmm.
And a woman who picked up a copy of this book about the bereaved moms said she worked for Heartland Hospice. Was a big home. They had 100 branches around the country. They're renamed. She said, I want to, and they eliminated the woman I worked with's position. But anyway, I would like to help people in hospice, the workers, the social workers, the volunteer coordinators, the spiritual care people. I would like to help these people organize. They often had talking groups for people after someone had died, because through Medicare they have to stay in touch with, mm-hmm. Through hospice, they have to stay in touch with these families for a year. And she said, I would like to have writing groups instead. People are getting tired of talking groups. Mm-hmm. They cannot stand hearing again and again these horrific stories from other people. Mm-hmm. So I developed an 8-week training program for these support service people and spelled it out very clearly. Week one, you do this, you do this, you hand this out. And it was all, people would write, and then they would read if they wanted to, and then we'd have a moment of silence, and then a moment of reflection when people could write about what they had heard from what these people had written. And then, so there was no crosstalk, like they say in meditation. It was mm-hmm. just respond on the page to what you've heard. So therefore, you don't have somebody saying, ew, you mean you actually wanted to keep your child at home for 2 weeks? You are really crazy. There was...
After they passed, yeah.
Yeah, none of that kind of stuff. So that also became a big part of my work. And now I've talked enough. Ask me another question.
No.
You're doing
well, that
good.
Just ended really...
I know.
Well, I just feel like I'm just going on and on here.
I'm not, and I'm watching the microphone here because all of a sudden I jumped up. I
questions.
I have questions. My first comment, though, and you and I have known each other for a long time. We haven't worked together as much as I would like, but we've known each other, and so I've known the story about Malcolm, but I want to just take a moment to honor him and honor your story there. Doc, I need a moment to reflect on that, before, especially me, who's so, like, quippy and, like, you know, you just shared something, and you just shared it. So you just put it out there, but in terms of the loss that you experienced, and I'm just so amazed how you then turned your own experience into your own healing journey. And then now, right, it's been, I mean, over 25 years.
He died in 1982.
Others.
The book was published in 2001. And that was, you know, his death was really the watershed in my life. Oh, I'll just say a little
please
funny.
Do.
Sort of, it's pitiful, but it's funny. I grew up in this very uptight WASP family. If you don't know what that means, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant family, where we never, when someone died, we did not participate. We did not take casseroles. We did not write notes. We did not go to funeral. I did not go to a funeral until I had to figure out what to do when my own son died and I was 30 years old. So,
fascinating.
My mother always said, you don't want to remind people of their dead. And I thought, I just sort of went along with that. When my best friend in college's mother died of cancer, I didn't send a note. Oh, I don't want to remind her that her mother died. I mean, I'm talking, this is like super uptight people.
That's interesting.
So interesting and so different from my world, Alicia, probably
your
world. All right.
I mean, you know, so for me, this was, for me to even write about and expose my kind of raw self in this book was a big deal for me, and I was terrified of my family's response and everything else. But one of the really good writing projects that came out of it was that I developed a workshop called The Art of the Condolence Note. And I felt like I was doing penance for all those notes that I did not write when I was growing up, and how important that is. For example, after Malcolm died, we received so many beautiful letters from nurses who cared for him in the hospital. There were times when I couldn't be there with him. And from people I barely knew, and I just thought, oh my gosh, this is what people do. You know, and I still have all those notes, and I realized, I mean, you know, it seems obvious to a sentient being that this is what one does, but it had not been obvious to me. And so I thought, and I was particularly struck by the notes I received from the medical community.
Yeah.
Doctors, nurses.
That they took the time.
That they took the time.
And that Malcolm made a difference to them. It wasn't just another patient going through, like, of course, sadness, but that it touched them enough.
Enough. So I said, okay, this is something I really want to try to cultivate. I want to develop a workshop that's very quick and easy and can help people do this, write these notes.
So then, because I will tell you, after when my mom died 3 years ago and I know what you mean. I received these notes that really touch me and the stories people would share. And when I've been in the position to write notes, sometimes I don't as much as I should. And I do reflect on how much it meant to me. And then I realize it does make a difference. So what do you, since I need to get better at this,
I encourage
people to do?
Well, basically, I developed a workshop that I could teach initially in medical centers with doctors and nurses and residents and interns and stuff. And they were all like, they all had to come to this thing. It was a required.
Mandatory
go to this. And so I would read some of the notes that I received from people, and I would say, do you realize can you understand the impact this has had on, I'm here to tell you, this has an amazing impact. So they all had to write a condolence note, and I gave them, they're basically four, I should have gone over my notes before, they're basically four things that you want to say. You know, dear so-and-so, because very often you may not even really know the family all that well. You may have only worked with them for a day or two, but you can say, you know, I am, my name is so-and-so, and I am so sorry to hear. I heard about your loved one's death through so-and-so. It was a pleasure working with your mm-hmm. your parent, your whatever. His eyes were always bright and shiny, even though he couldn't speak. I just love to look into his eyes. You think about something physical or personal, something very much not Hallmark card.
Something specific,
which, of course, is one of the most important things about writing in general, is specificity. You know, detail, not too much, but detail is what you go from the detail to the universal, really.
Yes, people would say how much they loved my mother's New York accent. Mm-hmm. My friend said she's the only person who properly knows how to say coffee.
Yeah, exactly. I'm from New Jersey, I know. So sort of kicking and screaming, these people, and it was especially with the residents and the interns, I'd say, just think back on some family you have worked with, and you could track down, if you don't know, if you can't remember their names or whatever, write down, you know, write these notes. Just get in the habit of writing these notes. And there was a Jane Brody. She wrote, I think she died, but she wrote for the New York Times for years and years.
I was like, that name sounds really familiar.
Yeah, she wrote all kinds of columns about health and
yes.
other things. And she wrote about what, you know, when her husband died, the notes that she received. And she wrote, and she basically gave me some of the guidelines for how to structure this. But, at one of these workshops at Duke, there was a young guy. So I would go through and I'd say, you know, there are four things. Identify your relationship to the patient, something that you remember about the patient, your deep condolences for the family, and then your, sending you whatever I forget what the last one was, just like positive energy, or just
sending love
and hopes for healing, something like that. And this one guy, so then I had them all write a note. Mm-hmm. They all had to write a note. I had stationery for everyone. I had envelopes mm-hmm. that were stamped. They had no excuse. So this one guy wrote this note. He said, well, you know, I was just walking down the hall at Duke Hospital, and there was a guy. I looked in a room, and there was a man, and he looked very close to death. And I just walked in the room, and I sat down with him, and I held his hand while he died. He was alone.
Oh.
I said, yeah. Are you kidding me?
And that's beautiful.
You know, do you know what that will mean
to the family? To know
they had no idea that anyone was even with him.
Oh,
and you are going to write and say, I was just an intern. I held his hand. And I.
That's a tremendous relief.
I mean,
that they think their loved one died alone in the hospital
right,
with no one around.
Right.
And then.
So.
Did he write the letter?
He did. He wrote. He
Good
read it.
Him.
He read it to the group. And then he had to just go figure out exactly who the
like
people
who
were
was.
And
who,
and get the address and all of that, which all of that can be done without a lot of trouble. So everybody then was instructed to go buy, and I say this to everyone I know, go buy some blank cards that you like and make sure you have stamps and envelopes and just sit down and do it. You know, you don't write stuff like, oh, you know, they're in a better place. Don't make
yes.
make no assumptions of any kind. Like,
I've
oh,
had people
I'm sure
that have lost people and it pisses them off. Oh, they're in a better place. Like,
yeah.
if they say they're
like
in
that.
A better place, then you say, yes, sure. Mm-hmm. But if you to say, oh, they're in a better place or God
right.
keep some of
right.
their own flowers for themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
My friend had all
like
kinds
God,
of stuff.
People say to me, God needed your son more than you did. I'm like, I mean, I can't use expletives on this show, but, you
yeah,
know, what would come into my New Jersey mind would be like, are you kidding me? So, anyway, that's been a...
Like a lot of things, you follow the lead of what they
yeah.
say.
So that's been a whole other program that I've offered in a lot of different settings. And I also am very interested. I've done a lot of work with people with chronic illness. I suffered from a life-threatening chronic illness for many years, and mine was cured by surgery. Very often, there are no cures, and
mm-hmm.
so how does one live with pain? How do you write have a dialogue with your disease?
Mm-hmm.
This all might sound odd, but there are, you know, or write a letter to your disease, let your disease write back to you. Make a list of things that happened to you during a day, and then pick one of them and write more about it. Or, you know, there are any number of tools that you can use to make these, to help people sort of become a little less, you know, once you get something out of your head and onto the page, your relationship changes to it. Mm-hmm. And this takes me to this man, James Pennebaker, who's from the University of Texas at Austin, who began in the 1980s to do research on the value of writing for people who are struggling. And he actually, he did all kinds of, you know, what do they call it, quantitative testing, where he would do people's blood pressure, mm-hmm. their pulse, their production of T cells, their everything. Before they wrote and after they wrote. Mm. And people always are better off for writing. I mean, now this might make people say, I got to do more of it. But really, just take that in. It's to get it out on paper and to express some about it. And also maybe to investigate something a little more deeply. Like, well, why do I... you know, I remember one of your guests was talking about a caregiver who just could never stop and said, well, I can't turn this over to anybody else for even 5 minutes because of, you know, what if I fall asleep or what if they fall asleep or something. And he suggested, well, maybe you want to, like, think a little bit about fear and, like, write a little bit about your fear. Like, what is the worst thing that could happen? Get some of this stuff expressed on the page. I tell everyone, just go, and I know this is very old-fashioned. Maybe you want to use one of these programs. Like, there's one called, I think it's called Day One or One Day. My husband uses it, Day One. There are all kinds of, I mean, you could just jot down little notes in there day by day. Any little thing that comes to you, it's helpful. It's helpful to just get it out of your head and on the page.
One of the things that, one of the things is the jump that you did from experiencing the benefit, doing it informally, and then quickly, or it seems quickly, turned into these formal programs. Like, how did you figure out, hey, I know how to structure this into an 8-week workshop? I'm trying to think if there's a link to your earlier days as a dancer. Like, hey, here are the techniques, here are the steps, and let's get your muscle movement. Like,
You want to know how I do this?
Well, I asked you, and we're on the radio, so just tell us.
I tell you, the process is horrible.
We love honesty here at Aging Well.
I tear my hair out over every workshop that I offer, even if I've done it 100 times before. It's like I always want to bring fresh material. I want to bring fresh things to read to people, fresh prompts, fresh inspirations. And my husband says to me, you know, you have got manila files full. You have got 200 manila files full of the workshops you've given. Why do you have to create it from scratch every day? That is my process, and it's very painful and horrible. But I am always glad that I've done it afterwards. Well, I suffer. And I suffer as a writer. Writing a book, when I used to write a column, oh, my God, be right up to the end of the deadline and be like, oh, this thing is due at 7 o'clock in the morning.
That's how I am right now with the grant that's due tomorrow. But
yeah,
But yet you do it. You don't have to. Or do you have to? I mean, I just do it.
I needed the work for some, you know, for some of these things were sponsored by grants, and that was very helpful. And I, you know, sometimes I worked. Well, when I worked in Qatar, you know, they just pay like, you know. My husband had a very bad falling out with his, one of his UNC, you know, anyway, where he worked. he was a professor. And so I did feel a financial imperative. But that's no need to, that doesn't mean that you have to tear out your hair and be up till 3 a.m. preparing. But that is just, I'm finally, okay, I'm 71, and I finally say, okay, this is how I do things.
Yeah, it's your process, it's, and it just
my
is.
My process is horrible. As a choreographer, my process was horrible. I hated the work that I produced. It was always well-reviewed. But so, you know, I have a lot of crap. I have a lot of stuff that I'm constantly working out.
All right. So. Well, Alicia, because I have like a bunch more questions, but you were about to ask one. Did I make you lose it?
No. Because I am so happy that writing is being brought back or should be brought back because we've gotten away from it. You mentioned getting cards or picking up books or putting stamps on envelopes where a lot of, I think that would be very helpful for our generation that has lost the penmanship.
Yeah.
And I don't know how we're going to communicate that because maybe they will actually write their thoughts down
on paper. Be careful with younger folks, though. My children, who are not so young, 18 and 22, they will bring me letters that people have written in cursive, and they're like, what does this say?
What does this say?
They stopped teaching cursive, so the generation, like Gen Z, doesn't know how, like when you write something to someone of a certain age, yeah, so that
handprint.
Yeah, it's different. All right, go on, Alicia, sorry.
So, and that's what I was wondering, if that's going to be, you know, something. I just think that if a child could do that now, it may help them more express themselves.
Yes, I think so. I mean, this is a problem with cursive. You know, definitely. And this was not a problem not all that long ago. I mean, my children learn cursive; they're in their 30s. But you know, let's not get hung up on that. Just print.
Oh yes.
A note.
Well, I have a theory. It's a new theory, and I've discussed it with very few, I think, my kid, because I was asking her with AI, the advent of ChatGPT and AI, and I think she told me she had an exam recently, and she's like, we had to handwrite it. And I said, like in a blue book back in the day? Mm-hmm. And she said, yeah. And so I'm thinking that because of the widespread use of AI and the only way that you can make sure that they're doing their own work and they're not pulling it off the, you know, having it generated, even though there's all these plagiarism, anything. Anyway, is to literally have them sit down in front of you and say, take out a pen and paper, and it's that, and express yourself right now.
I know a lot of professors who are doing
that.
Writing
is coming back. That's my prediction.
I think writing is going to come back.
That's good.
Yes.
I'm hopeful of that.
Well, it kind of has to, because otherwise everybody's going to plagiarize and nobody's going to learn anything, and then we're going to really be in
but so
trouble.
Going to these, did you ask your question fully?
Yes.
Okay. Going to back to these workshops, because I want to hear, I love the four ways to focus on a condolence note. What's your process of, when you create these workshops, you're not a trained therapist.
Right.
And yet this has a very therapeutic nature to it. So how do you decide, or how did you decide, these are the points that I think will have the most, as you put in your bio, restorative support, restorative healing, like that restorative and resilience. How did you decide the best exercises to get folks there?
And then how to deal with
the fallout?
It would change depending on the group, what I would use. I always, when I did workshops, even I've done a lot of stuff with hospices. I did an 8-year writing at UNC Hospital every Tuesday at noon with a woman named Heidi Gessner, who was she formed the bereavement services program there and was a divinity student. I brought one of these things. This is like a
gun. I want to see what's in her bag.
I've got 100
books. She's got a lot of stuff
here.
Over here.
Listeners, we are looking at a flip chart piece of paper with markers.
Well, this one actually doesn't have
research
it because
shows
it's probably
writing about important matters is good for our health.
Writing begets writing. Meaning grows on the page. This does not have on the bottom, and very because it was probably for something that had been going on for some time. I would always find trained therapists.
Yes.
And make sure that I could use them as resources. So I would say if stuff comes up for you that is really deep and very disturbing, here is someone you can contact.
That's great. Years ago, I was working at an organization
really
and, yeah,
Sorry.
That's okay. Years ago, I was working at an organization, and we had students would come with research projects that they wanted to do with the older adults that lived where I worked. And it was an undergraduate student, and it was more of an English or journalism class, and they were looking to recruit people to talk about their most traumatic experiences. Mm. And it was a writing class and a journalism class. Mm. And the residents who were reviewing it didn't allow it to go forward because there was no she hadn't thought about what's going to happen. You're going to ask folks, we have folks that are Holocaust survivors, we have folks that have had really traumatic experiences in their childhoods and in their adult life, so you're going to come in as a journalism, bring it out, and then walk away.
Oh my goodness.
With no support, no, and it just, it didn't seem to have enough kind of protections in there, and protection, not to be overly paternalistic, but just, it just seemed like you're going to come and create an emotional mess, and I did have a resident say to me, not about this, but about others, it's important for me to tell the story, but it makes me very upset for days afterwards. But
there's no help for it.
Yeah.
So that is interesting.
Having very strict, guidelines about what can happen within the group, and also, guidelines and boundaries for people so that they, and I don't believe, as I said earlier about the people that I would work with, these bereaved parents in particular, I couldn't open up with challenging. We would start out with things like sentence stems. I am a person who, when I'm upset, I feel. Mm-hmm. And then we might work into making like lists. What I miss most, or what I do when I, when I'm feeling really down, and then maybe what do I do for self-care? What else might I want to do for self-care that I'm not doing? Now, don't beat myself up about it. And then I put down some of these things, like lists and unsent letters can be very powerful. You can write letters to the dead.
Right.
And, sometimes
people I've done unsent letters to,
How do you prevent, though, the walk away empty?
Well, I don't do one-offs. Like these things.
What does
that mean? Well, my workshops will meet for 8 sessions.
God, it's not just a one-time.
Occasionally I'll do it all day, but those are more trainings for people who are going to go off and do this 8-week program that I talked about.
So there's a support group
with
component
hospice
to this. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. And
I do want to say something really quickly because I want to praise the sentence stem. As someone who, if you just tell people, write about whatever you want to write with, and they look at a blank sheet of paper and say, I don't know where to go. I love sentence stems. What you said, I had a pregnancy journal 22 years ago, it's like things I'm most excited about, things I'm concerned about. Why I wanted to have a baby with this man. I still love what I wrote. I've said this before. I love what I wrote about my husband, about why I was having a baby with him. And I've told my friends, if either of us pass away and I can't do it, use what I wrote as his eulogy.
That takes me into it. We could talk a long time about this, and I've given this a lot of thought. And I did do a master's program in transformative language arts at Goddard College, and I worked with a psychologist very carefully to develop this one-day workshop that I did with these bereaved moms that then turned into years and years of meeting together and developing other groups. I worked with a trauma specialist and a psychologist. So it's not
really,
like I'm just,
You just show up like,
release
all this.
I hate writing, but I'm going to get you guys to write. No. I have put a lot of time and effort into all of these. I hear you very clearly.
And I we've talked on the show about physical therapy and speech therapy and therapy. And when John Camp was on, you referred to his work about helping people videotape their life story. And I was really excited about the show because it's a great companion to that. How do we capture and share our thoughts
in the future
in writing? What do you say to people who say, I don't know how to write, but also nobody wants to hear my stories? Mm.
I always say you never know who wants to hear your stories.
Yeah.
You just never know who is going to want to hear your stories. I have 7 books here by one of my clients who started writing when he was 70. He wrote his first book when he was 70. He wrote about the history of his homestead farm that his great-grandfather homesteaded. Why did he leave Kentucky? Why did he end up in Nebraska and live in a, you know, a mound by the side of the river for a full year? All these questions he had no answers for. He said, I'm going to make sure that my children have answers to my questions. I'm going to give them as much historical information about my family as I can, and I'm going to let them know how I feel about as much as I can about my own life. Every time he sees his grandchildren, he writes a letter to them afterwards. He types it so they can read it because they're, you know, non-cursive people. But, and you know, the highlights of the trip and what he noticed about them and things that, and their, and the
even parents if they don't,
are
and if for
saving
some reason,
them.
They don't love it, like, right then and there.
No,
they'll
no,
love
they don't
it
even
at
see
some
them.
Point.
They don't even see them.
Oh,
the parents are saving them. The
oh,
parents
wow.
are saving them.
That's
so that's
better.
Another thing. I mean, there are so many ways to do things. There was something you said that made me. Yeah.
And I have a
go
question
on.
Because she has a. You said you started that last night.
Yeah. Well, this I've got
the
a
mind map.
Oh my goodness!
I've got the mind map.
So, folks, we're looking at a big piece of paper that has circles, and then it just starts going out to other circles. So, I mean, I know mind maps,
wow.
but how would you describe it? It's just
it's like a web of ideas.
Yes.
So I just put teaching in the beginning of this one, and I'm suggesting to people, like, you know, this was just to help me think a little bit about what I might want to talk about today. But I'm thinking for caregivers, if you have a wall where you could just put up a giant post-it like this, and you could just, you know, put, you don't even need, I will put something in the middle like me.
I have that. I showed you my, I have a big poster of, it has 30 different post-it notes
right.
of things that I experienced that I thought were crazy as a caregiver in case I ever do want to turn them into blogs or whatever, but yeah. So
this is just like, you might want to put something like, you know, daily life or whatever. You might come out here and you say, oh God, she was such a, you know, so-and-so was impossible today. Or I saw a beautiful slant of light coming through the room today. And then you might want to go off from, it gives you something. You can write anything you want on this. It can help formulate. I want to remember to call somebody and, you know, and activities that involve calling. Maybe you use a highlight pen. Now I know even something like this is probably the caregivers are saying, oh my, are you kidding? I don't have time to even do this. But this is like writing down one or two words about.
I would write
something.
One sentence when I was in the midst of it. I would write one sentence just to remind myself. I said, at some point, I'm going to want to be reminded of the craziness. So I had little things like one sentence, my love affair with Walgreens, because I was a caregiver during the pandemic and I needed to go there all the time to get hand sanitizer and supplies and all the stuff.
Or just like a little moment that you had with
tequila
a person.
Tequila and Amazon.
Or anything. So it's not like you have to start writing on a piece of paper
in a full sentence.
It's just like little boom, little sparks of things that come to you.
And put the date on.
Now, I hate to be the facilitator here. We have 2 minutes left, and I already have a theory. Not a theory. I have an idea. What I want to do is have Carol come back on and give a writing prompt, and then we'll just play some music. And then so that way, or do some sentence stems. Like, let's think about, we'll talk about that after.
Yeah.
But I'm already thinking, listeners, if you think that's a good idea for those.
I think it's a good idea.
I think it'd be really fun because we'll play music so that way there's some, you know, okay. So we'll do our own little something.
And they're all, I mean, there's so many journaling techniques that are really good, like dialogues with aspects of self. You know, me asking, why is my back hurting so much? Back saying, well, because if you'd ever sit down for a minute, maybe I wouldn't hurt so much. Well, me saying, well, how can I not sit down when I have to be on my feet all the time? And the back, you'd be surprised how your body will talk to you.
Oh,
or your,
oh my gosh,
your,
I love that.
There's one that I wanted to read here. There's one woman wrote about how when her child died, she had a dialogue with this infant that was born out of her grief, and she said, so she would say, oh well, I can't do justice to it, and I can't probably find it, I don't have time, but she would say, oh, there you are, you're crying all night, you have me up in the middle of the night. And then this child that represented her grief would say, well, I just, you know, I need everything I can get from you. And then the mother would say, well, now at least I can finally hold you on my hip. I don't have to have you in front of me all the time. And, you know, the baby was the grief. And it's just, and people say, oh, I don't have any ideas. I have worked with thousands of people, and I cannot tell you how creative people are. And then people say, well, not me, but yes, you.
Everyone's creative.
Everyone comes up with metaphors, images, ways of expressing them. And the thing is, if you don't write, you don't find them. As I say, you know, writing begets writing. You write more, and more comes out. And you think differently from how you write. So you can think and you go on and on. But once you start writing something, oh, that reminds me of this. And then it opens up a new memory. And, of course, prompts can really help. Like, you know, just a short poem prompt that might have images in it. That just whatever speaks to you from this poem. Go, write, 5 minutes. And so, I mean, I could have done that. I could have done that.
Yeah, she's looking at all of herself.
Look, I brought three poems to read.
I know. I was worried.
I brought quotes.
Do you have a short poem you want to do as we close out?
Maybe I'll just do this little. This is a quick one. Oh, and of course, there's the gratitude list, which is totally cliche now. But
it is,
you
so
know,
cliche.
It works.
I have done that. That but where it you, does, before you go to sleep, you write down the three things you're grateful for, or you can do it first thing in the morning, or now again since I talk. Mm-hmm. On the air, we do it on literally and figuratively on the air. We do it at dinner time. Name one to three things.
One to three things, or okay, blessing. But okay, so this is a little short poem. It's called Essential Gratitude by Andrea Potos. Sometimes it just stuns you like an arrow flung from some angel's wing. Sometimes it hastily scribbles a list in the air. Black coffee, thick new books, your pillow's cool underside, the quirky family you married into. It is content with so little, really. Even the ink on your pen along the watery lines of your dime store notebook could be a swiftly moving prayer.
Oh, my goodness. Now, well, that's both amazing, and then it makes me nervous. I don't know if I could write that.
Oh, no, you wouldn't write this. This is a published poet writing this.
Oh, okay. So I thought that was one of your workshops.
No. Okay. So you might say something like, you know, sometimes a list in the air, black coffee, anything like this, I could read this and say, maybe something jumps out at you from this.
Oh,
maybe
so it's a prompt.
Not.
It gets
it's
folks thinking about it. Well,
it's a prompt.
It started with the word gratitude. And speaking of gratitude, I have to give it to you, Carol Henderson. Thank you so much for coming on our Aging Well,
well
Together
thank
show.
Thank you so much for having me. And please, everyone, take advantage of these programs. They are so good.
Oh, you're the best.
I can't wait to go, and I want to talk to that guy from the...
Okay, we'll give you John Camp's information. All right,
John Camp and somebody else, too. Okay.
Okay, well, we need to sign off so that way Alicia can come on.
Thank you so much, and Alicia, good luck with your show. Yeah. I'm going to have to go check that one out, too. Thank you so much, Heather. This has been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Can't wait till you come back.
I know, right? There's going to be more. All right, thank you, everyone, for coming on, listening to us on the Aging Well Together show. Have a great week and get your thoughts down on paper.